Okay, Iron Ruby World.
How are you, man? Introduce yourself.
Good. I am Jimmy Schimenti. I'm a program manager on Iron Ruby. I write a lot of code during the day, so I'm not really a program manager traditionally. nor is anyone else on our team, which is kind of how we work. For instance, my boss is a dev, right? So it's an interesting team. But yeah, I work on Iron Ruby.
Awesome. So let's talk about, we've talked about the DLR before on Channel 9, and we all know what that is. Clearly, Ruby is a very dynamic, object-oriented language. It's also a functional language, reflective language, whatever you want to throw at it. It's a very interesting language.
Versatile. Yes.
What's going on here, man? What's Iron Ruby all about? Tell us the story.
So Iron Ruby is about bringing the Ruby programming language to .NET. Traditionally, Ruby is a language already existing, right? So Iron Ruby isn't a completely new language. It's an implementation of Ruby 1.8.6. So if you go to rubylang.org, download their installer, that's what you get.
Excellent.
Right? So so it's an implementation of that language. It's not the only implementation that's come out after it was out. JRuby exists, which is a Java version of Ruby. There's MacRuby, which is made to work directly with macOS and Cocoa and all things like that. There's Rubinius, which is another implementation of Ruby that's a complete rewrite. There's YARV, which is another complete rewrite. So there's a lot of implementations of Ruby. People who really like the language of Ruby and want to bring it to either their platform or their technology set or just want to make it better in general, faster, better for servers, etc. So Iron Ruby is bringing Ruby to .NET, like I said. And it's basically that, right? You have any .NET code base, right? VB, C#, even F#, it can interact with Ruby code and Python code through the DLR, right? So that's the interop layer.
And since you're implementing it for a specific version, I'm assuming that if I had a bunch of Ruby code that really knows nothing of .NET, it's just targeting Ruby, you know, as itself, how does that work?
Yeah, so it is a real Ruby implementation, right? So at RailsConf in the beginning of May, I showed it running Rails and running some real Rails applications. So when John Lamb introduced this project at Mix07, I think it was, and said we'll be running real Ruby applications, we're running real Ruby applications. Part of our test suite that we run on every check-in that anyone checks into the Ruby Python source code, you know, all the DLR source code, runs a Ruby spec project, which is becoming the gold standard of what a Ruby implementation needs to adhere to. And we run that, and we, you know, fail a certain set of it, but we know we fail. We make sure we have no regressions. We move forward, so we're running all real Ruby code to make sure that we're always working. We run Ruby Gems, which is a package managing application for Ruby, very popular. We run RSpec, which is a testing application for Ruby, all in our check-in suite. So we make sure we're running real Ruby applications all the time, because that's a big part of being Ruby. So we're, you know, you'll be able to take any random chunk of Ruby code and probably without any hassle be able to run it on Iron Ruby just fine.
Excellent. So what is that? I mean, the Ruby also has a rather large community. Of course, John Lamb was from that community, right?
You were. Yeah, I was. He was. So he was in the sense that he built his claim to fame was building, in the Ruby community, was building a pipe between the CLR and Ruby, right, which was called Ruby CLR. So it ran with the Ruby implementation, but it was able to access .NET things, and he had a blog post that talked about data binding active record or something like that with Ruby in a WPA or WinForms application that was extremely popular, right, because that was just unheard of. I demoed that at RailsConf too, so we can Iron Ruby caught up. But I was a Rails developer working at a university.
Okay.
Before coming to Microsoft, and really excited about Ruby. I had used Ruby throughout my college career, just as my choice language, though they taught me, you know, every other one under the sun.
Sure.
Then worked for the university on tutoring software and built a system in Rails porting from Java, and it worked surprisingly well. They're still cooking. It's called the Sysmint. It's a very cool piece of software. But yeah, and then I got a job as an intern here, working on the Iron Python project when it 1.0'd, and then stuck with it.
And
now working on Ruby.
So I mean, I think, you know, kind of the obvious question would be, when you think about the number of languages out there that actually popped, What is it about Ruby? I mean, I remember talking to Charles Nutter once when he was at Lang.net. I think it was 2 years ago. And he was like, you know, Ruby, the guy who designed it from Japan, I can't remember his name, forgive me. You know, it's a fun language. It's about, you know, it's not necessarily about focusing on the machine. It's focusing on what you can do with the language, what you can express with the language, blah, blah, blah. And so the question I would ask you is, what is it that really interested you in Ruby, the language, versus why didn't you use Java in college?
So I can't pronounce the guy who wrote Ruby, his name, but we call him Mats.
Excellent.
So that's his name.
Right on.
Not Mads from the C-sharp team, but Mats.
Right on.
M-A-T-Z.
Okay.
But what interests me in the language, it's exactly that. It's the expressiveness. Mm-hmm. So make the hard things interesting and make the simple things easy is kind of what it drives you down. So, for instance... the idea that it's a dynamic language, you know, have to type things, and you have a dynamic, or there is a type system, but it's dynamic, right? So it detects the type. Kind of like in C#, using var everywhere implicitly is kind of what it does. But it also does more dynamic things, so you can almost build little mini languages, Ruby, just by using its syntax, because it's lenient. It drops parentheses. For making dictionaries, you can omit the dictionary brace around it so it looks like name parameters. The syntax is very, very fluid, making the parser implementation extremely complex. So people who use Ruby love it because it's very expressive, and the people who implement Ruby hate it because it's so hard to implement, and it really is. Uh-huh. I mean, it's taken us a majority of 2 years, right, to build the language that's compatible. And we started from existing pieces, right? Like Ruby.net's parser is what we started with, which was another project implementing Ruby on .NET. So it's a hard language to implement. But what I liked about it was its expressiveness, the ability to just write code and actually have it work, right? It's not prototype code. It actually can exist in a real system. And if I want to get down to the bare metal, I can. So if this dynamic language isn't really suiting well for performance in some place, I could write code in C and then call it from Ruby. And the same exists with IronRuby, and we've made that experience much better. Because with Ruby, to interact with C code, you have to deal with the Ruby API that's written in C to create a Ruby class and create a Ruby method if you want to expose some API to Ruby. Now with .NET, we just consume C# code or any .NET code, any code for the CLR, verbatim. Right? Mm-hmm. So point in an assembly and we'll be able to call everything. So there's no interop layer that has to be written to take C# code and make it work with IronRuby. So IronRuby can directly use WPF APIs, right, or anything, right? A random library you find on the net. Mm-hmm. Download a DLL, you'll be able to require it using IronRuby and use it. So we bridged that gap has been shrunk, because I know people who developed with Ruby, they didn't do that a lot. Mm. They deal with the performance problem, or they try to solve a way to solve it in Ruby, and they wouldn't, you know, they'd still have their problem, they just, you know, because they didn't want to write C code, right?
Anything. Sure.
But being IronRuby, you have more people who are interested in .NET, C# is a bit more friendlier. JRuby has the same thing going for it, and it's again, this goal to bring Ruby to the platform, which is useful,
a good goal.
To the Ruby language, yeah. So.
Great. Now, of course, you guys are going to emit IL when you compile, right?
Sometimes, yes.
Sometimes. So yes. I have an option of not...
So IronRuby, we do emit IL, right? So if you have a long-running process, you're going to have you're going to have MSIL on the stack. So if you attach a debugger to it, you'll see it. When we start up, we interpret. So for startup reasons, we're going to not emit IL because jitting, actually taking that code and compiling it on demand while starting is slow, right? It is going to take some time. We do have reasonably fast JIT, but nothing compared to the native code execution like that Ruby has today. Mm-hmm. And Ruby itself isn't a blazingly fast implementation. There's new implementations which are coming out which are fast, but for us to even be competitive with the current stable implementation, jitting on startup is brutal. A good example of this is starting Rails, which is a decent-sized code base. It's going to take about 80 seconds to start Rails, where Ruby starts it in like 5. Mm-hmm. And today we start it in 30 seconds with this adaptive compilation. Mm-hmm. But we do emit IL. It's just during startup it will be it'll be interpreted. And then you hit the method, hit a method a couple times, or a certain call site, a call site being just something that you need to compile, or something you're calling. Eventually, if you hit that a couple times, a background thread will kick off, it'll start compiling. When it's done, that code will start running. So it's a bit of a hybrid model. IronPython does the same thing. It's just one of the solutions to startup. But yes, it emits I/O, so it's not. And that's how it interops with .NET. So since it's actual I/O, we can emit the real I/O instruction to call a .NET method. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's how you get that interrupt.
Cool. And of course, you know, it's a garbage collected language already, but the difference is IronPython, you get Patrick DeSue's garbage collector, which is rather performant for a general purpose garbage collector. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a nice treat. What other things? I mean, I'm still trying to think, like, what? So besides, you know, interoperating with a C# app or a VB.NET app or a COBOL.NET app, whatever, why else would I want to use IronRuby?
So the interop is not, so being able to interop with the app is very important, and it's important in certain scenarios. Mm-hmm. I'm not expecting that anyone from the Ruby community, just who's using Rails today, is going to say, "Oh, I can run my stuff on IronRuby," and never look at the .NET, never look at .NET, and just use IronRuby because it's there. Mm-hmm. Even if it was faster, you know, which is our goal is to be faster than the current Ruby implementations. Even if it's faster, I don't see them doing that, right? Because it's not socially appealing, right? They've got to use Mono to run it on Linux, and most of the community either uses Mac OS or Linux. So that's not something we're targeting. We're definitely targeting the existing .NET community, bringing Ruby to them. And the two scenarios I see, which are killer in that space, are testing existing .NET code and adding scripting support to existing .NET code. Now, existing .NET code, this could, of course, be an application you start building today, right? It doesn't have to be some existing code base. But it does have to be a code base you have the ability to change. You can't just take random, you know, assembly foo and start injecting the script code into it and then ship that, right? You can't modify existing things to use it. But the DLR hosting API, which is how we accomplish this, is just a collection of APIs to script .NET applications.
Cool.
Right? So from the testing point of view, a couple lines of code, right? You can, because that integration between .NET and Ruby or Python, it's just the dynamic languages and .NET, the static world, right?
Sure.
Are so tight. You can, if you have a given assembly, you can call it like it's Ruby code. And because it's test code, writing in C# seems a bit heavyweight, right? You're writing a lot of code just to do testing. And you might want to just write some succinct tests. And Ruby has definitely pushed Ruby applications have definitely pushed the forefront of testing infrastructure as far as how you express tests. So RSpec is the big project in Ruby land, which gives you a very elegant way to describe your tests. Mm-hmm. And you call, you know, if you had a foo variable, you do foo.should, and then the equal sign, and then what it should equal. And that's how your tests look. There's no assert this and then parameters, and you're not sure which parameter is which, right? The expected or actual. Mm-hmm. So it's a very expressive way of writing tests, almost like a domain-specific language. Mm-hmm. And that touts to one of Ruby's ability is to be able to create these languages that it's Ruby, but because of its syntax, you can manipulate it into something that's much more expressive than other languages are, even other dynamic languages. So that's testing. And another new testing framework that's come out recently is called Cucumber. And Cucumber actually lets you write tests in English. So actually writing words. So when this is that and as this is that, right? You actually write a kind of like a haiku-looking paragraph. And they know how to parse those statements into then your RSpec-looking tests. So you can give a domain expert the test and say, does this test look correct? And they say, yeah, sure. You know, they read it, and that, yeah, that's what the software should do. And then they have a layer to translate that into calling your actual code. And it's very, very expressive. Iron Ruby recently, we've done some work to get Cucumber working, and on my whiteboard I have Cucumber in a box saying that I need to post about it because it's a very cool language. So being able to test .NET code using Cucumber is very cool. And the Cucumber project actually has an example of using Iron Ruby to do that. In when you download them, they have an examples directory where there's, you know, some assembly and a sample test. So I think testing is very expressive because it's all about getting it done, right? You want to write the test, you want it to fail, you want to change your code, and you want to see it pass. And the compile step in between running tests seems like just way too heavyweight for testing, right? Especially if you're doing the test first thing, it's really nice to write your test, have it fail, and then go off in a Visual Studio, type the code, compile, and then run the test again. And you're not now doing another compile step. You don't have to make sure you changed everything at the same time, right? Because if you got the test wrong, or if you got the code wrong, you can always change one or the other, right? So it just seems like a much nicer way to work. And at Mix09, when John gave his talk about Ruby and Python in Silverlight 3, we showed testing an existing Silverlight application with Iron Ruby. And right in the browser, you get a little console, and you can write tests in there. You can run files for that. So a very nice experience, and that's a good point that I usually say in the beginning when I talk about Iron Ruby, is that when I say .NET, it runs on .NET, it runs on Silverlight too. The other point I wanted to make was about adding scripting to your application. So that's the other domain or the other space where people would want to use Ruby and .NET together. And this is much far-reaching, right? You can speculate how you'd want to use this. We don't really know how people are going to use this. Mm-hmm. John and I have a theory that we need to get real data about this. We're trying to get existing open source projects to add scripting support to their application, be it Ruby or Python. Things like paint.net and Witty, which is a Twitter client. I guess I have to go to a meeting, or no, that's nothing. So existing applications like Witty or other .NET applications to add scripting support to them to get things like extensions, or, you know, imagine all the cool applications you could write if you could program against your Twitter feed without having a web service call, right? Just having the objects there. Yeah. So it would seem pretty cool. And then that's just a general thing. Like in paint.net, if you could write, you know, GIMP-like extensions and pick your language, right? You could write them, write filters for blurring images or whatnot, right? So there's tons of things that once you want to extend an application, the extensibility, right, that's the point. It's endless what you can do with it. And you get that for fairly cheap when you add a dynamic language, especially Iron Ruby or Iron Python, because of the hosting API and the ability to just use .NET code basically as eval from Ruby. So long-winded, but those are the two.
That's really cool.
Those are the two spaces where
you're seeing most current uptick. That's sort of the basis of your vision.
That's where I see the most success with dynamic languages on the .NET platform, because C# and VB, right? They're well-established languages. Mm-hmm. They're here. F# is taking another domain that hasn't been visited by those languages, but dynamic languages are general purpose. They're made to be used in place of a static language. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that being successful on .NET, right? Because there's plenty of people who are very happy with C#. Now, you could use Python or Ruby to write an application from scratch, an entire one, and have no C# code in your application at all, and use it for WPF or ASP.NET, or you name your framework. Mm-hmm. But practically, I don't see that as being some place where people who are already in the .NET community are, right? They're, mm-hmm. they're not starting with that. They are, sure, use whatever language you want, right? This is why the toolbox is there for you, right? To pick the best tool for the job. Mm-hmm. But existing people, they're going to have existing applications, and they see this new shininess, and, oh, how can I use this together? And that's really the scenario that
that's cool.
I'd like to make easy.
But I think, you know, in some sense, when you think of C# and what Anders and team have done, of course, VB implicitly had late binding and, in some sense, kind of dynamic typing. But with C Sharp, they added a dynamic keyword. They've added, you know, lambdas, a lot of functional constructs in the language, and then all of a sudden F Sharp comes in and be like, so it could be that once people start really liking the dynamic vibe, who knows, maybe they will want to just fire up new
sure.
Iron Ruby application.
And speaking of dynamic, it makes the experience a bit, actually much more pleasant. So today, in Visual Studio 2008 or .NET 3.5, if you want to use Iron Python or Iron Ruby, you have to download the language, right, which comes with the DLR binaries. You have to reference them from your C# application, and then you have to use a static API and pass strings to it, or you know, files, to execute them. So it feels fairly reflection-esque, right? It does not touch reflection. We have our own method of dynamic method dispatch and how the DLR works, right? Mm-hmm. But it feels rather laid-bound, standard .NET API. It's not very friendly. It's definitely friendly to use, the friendliest thing out there, mm-hmm. but it's still not ideal. And dynamic definitely ups the bar, because if now you can have an object which is typed dynamic, and you do, if that object is called foo and you do foo.bar, that's going to do essentially the same thing that this very reflective API did in the past. So you still get the expressiveness of C# and VB, but when you actually call that method, it could be calling into Ruby code, or it could be calling into Python code, or COM code, or whatever dynamic is bound to at that moment. Mm-hmm. So it makes that interop much easier. So I definitely think as, I don't know, when 2010 ships and people actually start using the new features in C# 4, the uptake of dynamic languages could definitely follow that trend, because it is easy to use them then. Mm-hmm. So and no doubt that those languages have been inspired by existing dynamic languages.
Absolutely.
Right? There's no doubt, which is great. You know, I don't ship anything in VS 2008, 2010, right? Who knows if in the next version. Mm-hmm. But the idea that because we've been working on these languages, that they've been influencing the languages that are in the box, it is nice. So at least I feel like I'm doing my part to sell something, right? But because we, you know, you don't have to pay for any of this.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the uptake could definitely be much more, but the experience is definitely better in the future.
Excellent. Now, Iron Ruby is an open source project,
yes.
Or a shared source, or whatever you want to call it.
So shared source, we don't use that term anymore, right?
Right.
Because we used to have a shared source license in Microsoft, and that's been replaced by the Microsoft public license, which is an OSI approved license, therefore an open source license. Iron Ruby is an open source project, part of it in the true sense that we do accept user contributions. So there's two major pieces to Iron Ruby: the compiler, which is you send text to it, right, it runs Ruby code, and the libraries. So because all the Ruby libraries, some of them are written in Ruby, and we can just run those, but some of them are written in C, then we have to re-implement those. So a majority of the second half of Iron Ruby, we've opened up to the community and said, if you'd like to contribute to this area of Iron Ruby to make Iron Ruby run Ruby applications better, we will accept all your contributions, right, as we see them fit, right? You know,
sure.
In the true sense of being a core of an open source project. But yeah, so it's open source in that respect, and it's now on, the project is now on CodePlex. It was on RubyForge in the past, but not many Ruby people are using RubyForge anymore, and it's always nice to get some .NET exposure to the project too, so CodePlex seemed like a good fit. But our source code is hosted on GitHub, which is a very Ruby-friendly place, actually written in Ruby on Rails, the site itself. And it's a Git source code management website. Git is a version control system that we use for our Ruby, because that's what the cool kids are using. That's what everyone who uses Ruby is flocking to. They've moved from SVN over to Git. So yeah, that's a good brief overview of the projectiness of it.
That's good.
Yeah.
Have you gotten many, you know, useful contributions over the years?
So it's spiked. It's definitely spiked recently. In the past, we've had two or three consistent contributors during any given release. The past RailsConf release, we had about 15, 15 people contribute in some way, be it a external, not actually contributing to the source code, but making a library on top of iRuby that we've included in a package called iRuby Contrib, which is just a bundle of stuff to make .NET and iRuby work better. Mm. So there's some WinForms DSL APIs in there. There's a bunch of stuff, some Silverlight APIs in there, but all things to make consuming some .NET API friendlier. Because there's just, you know, there's, though we do call them directly, there's just some places where .NET doesn't look very Ruby-esque. So people have been, you know, kind of manipulating, they can manipulate the .NET APIs to be more Ruby-friendly. Sure. But over the past, in the past release, we had many more contributions, which was good. But you know, personally, especially from if I was an outsider, you know, contributing to the libraries is interesting, but not entirely interesting, right? You know, it's someone asking them to write an implementation of SSL is might be fun for them and might not. I think the compiler is much more interesting to open up, and I don't know if we're going to do that in the future or not, but it's definitely one of the things that I would like to see. But we, you know, we are a Microsoft project, and we have to work within the Microsoft legal guidelines, and we're trying to you know, push the boundaries there, definitely. I mean, the open, just generally having an open source project is difficult enough. Mm-hmm. But we'd like to see it open up more. Whether that'll happen or not, who knows? But we're trying. The goal for Ruby is to be as open source of a project as possible at this point in time. Be a true community project. So
cool. And now you said you implemented it in C Sharp.
Yes.
And this includes obviously the compiler.
Yep. So everything's written in C Sharp. There's no native code in the entire code.
Now, why was that made decision made?
Because the DLR is so let's back up in time for
time warp.
Time warp, right? So Python, Iron, yes. Python, 1.0'd in I believe it was late 2006. That actually started being implemented in Python. Right, Jim Huguenin wrote it in the standard Python implementation, and then when he came to Microsoft, they ported it to C#. So we already had a code base in C# for Iron Python. And the DLR was an effort to say, hey, you know, there are some things from this implementation that we learned that could be useful for other dynamic languages. So let's pull that out into some general piece, and maybe we'll build other languages on top of it. And the second language to be built on top of this common infrastructure, at that time, really the Python runtime was iRuby. So much of the DLR's design was taken from Iron Python, and then while building Iron Ruby, changing the design. We also built a JScript implementation and a VB implementation on top of it as test implementations for to vet the design. But those have been long since unmaintained,
sure.
But and unreleased in some cases. But that's why it's C#, because it was C#, right? The existing infrastructure, and plus that's what we're writing for, right? We're writing for .NET, and our customers, right, Iron Ruby customers would be Ruby people. Mm-hmm. So if they're from the C world, they're more comfortable with a C like language, which would be C#. Mm-hmm. So that's why.
Excellent. Without having to deal with C.
Yeah, exactly, right? It could have been written in VB, right? But that's just not what happened.
Cool.
You know, when VB writes VB in VB, then maybe other languages would write their themselves in VB. But that might be coming, right? Who knows?
I mean, it's interesting. Sort of, I could see sort of an interesting use of F# for building a dynamic language.
So F# is great for parsers. My first exposure to F# wasn't with F# at all. It was with ML. I learned ML in college,
okay.
And I wrote parsers in college with ML. And it's pattern matching, right? The ability to, it's almost like Prolog, the language Prolog, where you say, or like Lisp or any other language, where you say, okay, this function, like a real mathematical statement, right? This function, when x is 0, do this. When X and Y or 1 do this. When who cares what they are, do this. Mm-hmm. Much like, you know, most mathematical equations are written. And just so happens that for parsing, that's very useful, because you can define your kind of parse state in those expressions. So you can build a parser out of one function and just a lot of those expressions. And just based on what state you're in, you pop into these, you create different nodes at that point, right, for your AST. I don't think we don't
abstract
have...
Abstract syntax
yes,
the
yes.
So of course they know what an AST is.
So we don't have an example of writing a parser in F-sharp. For a DLR language. Mm-hmm. That would be a great thing to do. I wish someone would do it.
Hey, somebody in the audience.
You know?
Come on, guys.
But what we do have is a... Bill Childs
Girls.
Just...
Sorry.
Bill Childs just wrote a example language on the DLR. So we've forever only had these larger languages, more real languages, which don't do very well for education purposes, because they are complicated and hard to grasp. So Bill Childs, who's a PM on the DLR, just wrote a language called Simple, which is a half Python, half Lisp language, and that's on dlr.codeplex.com. And it's a very good example of how to write a DLR language with very remedial .NET interop, right? Just showing the basics.
Great.
But his parser is handwritten, so it's in C#. So or Python. Actually, I'm not sure how he wrote it. It's a hybrid app. It's actually written part in Python and part in C#, which is interesting because he wrote the language in Iron Python, which is a DLR language on itself. So it's an interesting take on the whole thing. So it's cool that worked. But yeah, F# would be very cool for parsing. I'd say even for code generation too, but the DLR already does that for you. So F# could be really useful for writing, for parsing to a syntax tree, and then for even converting that syntax tree over to what the DLR expects. Right, so the DLR has an understanding of what its tree should look like, and a syntax tree could be very different than that. So also writing that conversion, and then after that, the DLR takes over. And whatever you write your libraries, your language libraries in, or your how you do .NET and ROP in your language, you know, that could be anything. But F# could be definitely interesting for the front end, definitely.
Cool. So, I mean, what's kind of new in your world with Iron Ruby? I mean, where are you exactly today?
We're trying to finish,
okay.
Like we've been forever. But we've forever set a date. We've been saying that we have this date of, I think John has gone to talks and said it was the end of June 2009, which is this month. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to be July 2009, right? So we're getting close. OSCON is in July 2009, so there's no, there might be a coincidence there.
Yes.
Right? And actually John's talk at OSCON is called Iron Ruby 1.0. And the description says, come celebrate Iron Ruby 1.0. So, you know, it might be.
Sure. But it's dynamic, right? It's
yes,
dynamic
exactly.
Date
exactly.
Time.
He
no,
might
no.
change it tomorrow.
Absolutely.
But so we're trying to wrap things up. I'm writing documentation for .NET Interop currently. So we have very rich .NET Interop, but, you know, unless you look through our code base, you might not be familiar with how to do, like, you know, how to hook events or how to use generics. Or how to get at the directly get at CLR methods rather than going through Ruby methods, right? So there's various things that, you know, you might not be familiar with how to do in Ruby, especially, or in Iron Ruby, especially if you are a Ruby programmer, and especially if you're a .NET programmer. So we're writing a bunch of documentation. So on IronRuby.net, there'll be much more documentation on how to interop with .NET, showing examples of kind of what I talked about, scripting.
Absolutely.
And testing, right? So,
and also,
so
as you said earlier, about taking a pre-existing
yes.
Ruby application, say somebody built, you inherited a website, but there's just some super cool things you want to use from .NET, but you already have this big Ruby base, then this is how you would easily be able to play.
Yeah.
Or not easily, but probably easily.
Yeah.
Be able to play with the
.NET. So I've taken a lot of Rails apps that I've written and run them on Ruby pretty well.
Nice.
The place where it falls over is the database. So we Iron Ruby has a database adapter for Rails for SQL Server today, and sometimes you write SQL for MySQL, right, and not for SQL Server, and they could be different. So that's the only place I've ever had trouble. So if you write Rails code true to using the Rails APIs, it'll be fine. If you went off and did your own SQL stuff, you might have problems because if you weren't using SQL Server in the past. But yeah, various Ruby code runs, right? Like we have a to build our source code base, we wrote a Ruby script to do it, so it knows how to call out to CSC and send the right parameters, and use Ruby code to build our source code base, much like a makefile is, but in Ruby that's called rake, so rmake kind of thing. Okay. So we use that to build our source code tree. I mean, you could always fire it up in DS and build it, but we have Ruby scripts to do that. And we initially wrote that in standard Ruby, but that runs fine in Iron Ruby. And we try to throw as much Ruby code at Iron Ruby to make sure it runs. And, there's always some places where we find new bugs and we fix them, but, that's why we're not 1.0 yet. But when we, we'll definitely, I think a good goal of 1.0 is understand, be as compatible as we can be and understand where we're not and document that. But it won't be that far off. Today we pass 80, do I have it written down anymore? It's about 81% of the Ruby spec test suite we pass. Now that's an average. A Ruby spec is composed of a couple different parts. On the language, the actual core language, we pass over 95% of it. So we're definitely the Ruby language. Where we're not is the, there's library support. So if you choose random library in the Ruby standard library, that we just somehow don't, we might not support fully yet, that's where applications tend to fall over. So we support that 80% of what Ruby spec says should be there. That may not be the, the full thing, but we support 80% of that. So it averages out. It tends to average out to about 82. But I definitely want to be over 90% when we get to 1.0, but we'll see. We'll see how that pans out.
A lot of work.
It is a lot of work. A lot of it's, sometimes you get things for free. By implementing one little feature somewhere, you might get, 10% hit here, or it may take you thousands of little fixes to get 1%, right? It's, who knows the scale. But we know where we're deficient in various libraries, and the community's been helping out building that, and
good.
We've been building that, so, it's just being, keep stepping forward, and we'll get there.
Good. And like any language, it needs to be used.
Yep.
And if it's not used, it's not going to be able to evolve very fastly.
So anything else new? The coolest thing that I've been working on recently is a tutorial for Iron Ruby. Now, Iron Python has a tutorial as well. You have an HTML page you read through. My boss, who sits across the hall from me, Sri Board, had an idea of why don't we build a Ruby application to be the tutorial, as in a runner for the tutorial. Because we have a real big problem about testing the tutorial in Python. Right? How do you test an HTML page that has HTML snippets of Python code in it? How do you make sure that always stays running in some automated fashion? Well, if we had an application that actually ran this tutorial somehow, we could test it easily. So we would get a benefit too. So I've been building this WPF app, which is a tutorial app to walk through the tutorial. And that's been really cool because I'm building a WPF app in Iron Ruby, and we found a bunch of random bugs and stuff and, kind of vetted the whole idea of could you really build a desktop application with Iron Ruby
Great.
And do it successfully. And it's interesting because you come into,
Well, can you?
Yeah, so you can, right? I could demo it for you, and it'll be in our code base in a week or so. But it works. It works really well. And funny enough, it's a lot like that assessment system I built in college, right? You always come back and build the same thing. But it feels a lot like that because it is a tutorial thing. But it works great. And the funny thing is, desktop applications are, especially on .NET, are made for some static system, right? So you start the window, and then the window never closes again. Or the window closes and then your process quits, generally, right? And then you have to start your process again to get the window up. Well, in an interactive environment, you really want to pop open the window, get it running, and then tear down the window, reload your code, and pop it back up in the same process. So we've been working on getting that working, and it's playing fun black magic with threads, and it all works really nice. Whether it's useful or not, like maybe it's just better to kill the process and restart. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a dynamic language. We're trying to get a better interactive environment for building any type of application. So,
sure.
So the WPF, playing with WPF has been really interesting. So, you know, whether anyone actually wants to build a WPF application in iRuby, I don't know. But you know, and I actually built the UI in Blend and then popped open iRuby and just consumed those XAML files.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, trying to get the whole designer-developer workflow continuing to go. And that worked really well. So, you know,
great.
That's you definitely can do a lot of useful things with iRuby. It's not a toy anymore. It's definitely a real language, especially when you're using .NET. The iRuby 1.0 will really mean we run real Ruby applications. But today we run Ruby, and we work very well with .NET. So that's definitely the strong point. But we're definitely committed to delivering a real Ruby implementation. A lot of the critics have said we will build a half-assed Ruby implementation and then make it work really well with .NET, and then, you know, do that whole embrace extend thing. But this will run real Ruby application, a real Ruby code. So real Ruby applications will run on it. I say that over and over again, but I mean it.
Of course.
Because
otherwise, what's the point?
Sure.
I mean, really. Why on earth would there? I mean, there would really be no point.
Yeah. So, because then we wouldn't
more power to you.
We wouldn't call it Ruby then.
No,
right.
But I will ask you this. It's a great segue.
Yes.
You know, it's one of the last questions I have for you is, of course, why the iron prefix on these things? What the hell does that mean?
Everyone asks that. Actually,
I've never heard an answer.
So, some people have been told that it's from Iron Chef, and it's supposed to mean we're the best. And that's not true. Though I'm fairly cocky, that is not true. That is not what it's intended to be. Jim Huguenin, when he made Iron Python, actually at that time his kids were fairly small, and he had they had a children's book. I don't remember the name of it, but it talked about a nail and talked about hammering and an iron and being strong, and just the symbolism of the word iron in that children's story resonated with him, and that's why he called it Iron Python. And it was just this sense of being strong, and that's really it. It's not.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because iron doesn't really evoke sort of notions of, you know, dynamicness.
Fairly static, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's iron.
Yeah,
but, so there's kind of a nice little play on words there.
Yep. Right. But Iron Python was named for that reason. I wish I could find. I'll remember.
That's cool.
I'll remember it later. But yeah, that's the meaning behind
it. Great.
The name.
Well, I hope, you know, people watching this, you guys should, they can download this from CodePlex.
IronRuby.net has a link to it. CodePlex has a link to it, so ironruby.codeplex.com.
Great.
And you can get our source code on github.com/ironruby.
I will put that in the text post because I don't think anyone will be able to actually click on what you just said.
Sure.
That's coming, though, man. Trust me.
That's awesome.
Imagine clicking on verbal links.
That's pretty
cool. I like
cool.
that idea.
There's links all over the place. So
right on.
You go to
man.
One of those, you'll get it.
Well, hey, I think this is a really interesting project. It's definitely a noble language. I mean, that's why people are using it. It's very interesting. So I look forward to seeing how this evolves, and hopefully with 1.0.
Come back and talk. We'll talk about 1.0.
Excellent. Cool, man. Take care, Jimmy. Nice to meet you, man.
Yep, you too.